Washington Square On Air is the audio town square for the Washington Square Review, Lansing Community College's literary journal. Writers, readers, scholars, publishing professionals, citizens of the world, gather here and chat about all things writing. Hey there, this is Melissa Ford Luckin, editor for the Washington Square Review. I'm here today, though, as Professor Melissa Ford Luckin with Isaiah Wummel, one of my Composition 121 students. Hey there, Isaiah.
Hello.
So tell us about your journey to LCC, most specifically how you got here recently.
I've actually been an LCC student for 2 years. During my senior year, I was given the lucky opportunity to do dual enrollment and participate a little bit in the college festivities of, you know, being a traditional college student. And I mean, getting to do those experiences got me into kind of loving the learning that I get to do here at LCC.
Okay, talk a little bit about those experiences.
I got to senior year.
What school were you attending?
I was, I'm an alumni from Holt High School.
Okay. All right. So they, how did, when you say you got the opportunity, how did that come to you there?
Mine's a very weird circumstance. Due to being in the situation I've been in, was able to forego getting extra credits while transferring to a different school, which gave me an opening to start taking dual enrollment classes during my senior year.
Okay. Who approached you about the dual enrollment?
It was actually Lucas Schrauben, the LCC academic advisor at Holt High School.
Oh, okay. All right. So when you first started here at LCC, what were you expecting?
I was expecting to get my butt absolutely whooped with classes. I was expecting it to be just an utter slog of pretty
much
everything.
Why did you think that?
I don't know. I guess I've always had that preconceived notion that college was always such a pain.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like that's not quite what happened.
Oh, not at all.
All right. Tell us what did happen.
Honestly, it was one of the easiest things I've ever done. Most enjoyable things I've done, too.
Okay.
I've never had more fun than when I'm doing my class here at LCC.
Okay. You mentioned college experiences. What, be more specific.
Before I got to participate in college festivities, I was quite social, but I never really got out much and interacting with my community. But being here at LCC, I see so many people that I know every day, and I get to interact and like be a part of the community.
Okay. And interact, you see them maybe like at the Learning Commons in the hallway. Where do you see them?
Everywhere.
In class?
I'm going from building to building multiple times every day. So I see such a variety of people and everywhere, and everyone just has such a good smile on their faces.
Okay. So it's pretty relaxed. It feels familiar, even though it's still kind of new. All right. So you let me know a little bit about your unusual journey through school. Talk a little bit about that.
So I am a previous foster youth, luckily adopted, but, my journey began when I was around 14. I went into the foster care system, and it presented a unique set of challenges with transferring from school to school as placements change and having to find my own bearings and get a hold to the point where I'm actually able to keep up. And then through said challenges, I learned not only how to just cling on, but how to strive to succeed.
Okay. Something that some people aren't aware of when you change schools. Did you change in the middle of the year?
Multiple times.
Okay. Because you're enrolled in one set of classes, and then when you move to a new institution, they have to enroll you in classes, but they can't always match up what you were doing. So I'm guessing there was a lot of disconnect there.
There was so much disconnect.
All right. How did that happen? Like, how did you work around it? It sounds like you probably went from like math and history to, you know, psychology and sociology in the same, you know, month.
Adjusting took a while. Teachers had a certain level of understanding, but a lot of it fell on my part. And I remember having to go to like spend all my extra time in the library reviewing all the previous sections that were covered and going into great detail about making sure I could practice and get down the fundamentals so I can be ready and prepared for like the upcoming stuff in like the next day of class.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that constant like feeling behind and like it's mind boggling.
Right, because you would have missed whole chunks of whatever happened before you got there.
Yeah, I mean, when I was going to a school, Athens, Michigan, it was small little country bumpkin school. I was taking economics during the second semester, and they do block classes, so it's about 1 hour 45 minutes for each class. So that made it even harder because I only got like maybe a week and a half into like the semester, and then I had to transfer to Lanesburg High School, and there I got into economics class, but for their economics class, it's a junior level class while me still being a freshman. And then they're already like 90% done with the class. So I have to like spend like the next 3 weeks just behind like one textbook, memorizing it just so I can maintain a good enough grade to pass the class.
Mm-hmm. You've let me know that you're pretty open about talking, you know, about the experiences that you've been through and how that's affected you. I'm wondering, how open were teachers when, like, how much information did you have to give them about why you popped in there all of a sudden?
I would say the first few times I transferred, I was usually a little bit more reserved about it. And teachers did what they could with that. But through enough transferring, I found out that actually being more open is more advantageous.
Mm-hmm.
They're more willing to be like understanding and compromise with you to help you strive to succeed.
Mm-hmm. So you just have to be straightforward about how you landed there. Give us an idea of how you said you've transferred a lot. Can you give us a visual? So this started when you were 14.
And I did transfer to a lot of schools before foster care, but in foster care, I was at 5 schools.
Okay. And then what was the reason for the transfers?
A lot of it was just I wasn't doing good in like either the placements or the placement I knew was going to be temporary but had to go longer then because they couldn't find a new placement for me. Like for my time at Athens, I was living with my biological uncle. Things weren't going good. The relationship, it was quite a struggle. And eventually he wanted me out, so I got moved. And with a temporary home, or referred to as respite. And usually those go for maybe like 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even a month. But because they couldn't find a placement for a kid of my age, because I think I was around 15, almost 16 at that time, I was living with her for almost 8 months. And because I was there for so long, I had to start participating in school. So I was not super academically behind.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot of the responsibility fell on you for figuring out what it is that you needed to do to make stuff up, you know, your academics and find the holes. Is that what happened? It was mostly just you?
A lot of the responsibility is on you to advocate for your own success and striving to actually succeed. Most, if not all, foster kids have a social care worker, but what most don't recognize is you are like a number on a paper for them. They don't really too much consider you, or at least from my perspective, they don't consider you. They're like, oh, I got to deal with this person's problems now. So there isn't too much of that care or connection, which makes it hard because they're not going to strive for you to succeed. They're going to do the bare minimum just to give you the requirements. And it's really not beneficial in a lot of foster youth.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're just doing their process, whatever the state requires them to do, and that their process doesn't include looking out for you educationally.
I mean, I was lucky enough that I knew, like, I had to beg some of my schools to let me participate in certain classes or transfer to other, like, weird classes that had somewhat, like, alignments with previous class I took, so I didn't have to like catch up on the entire class beforehand.
How did your transcript hold together?
My transcript is in shambles. utter shambles.
How did you, it sounds like it was your responsibility to keep track of, you know, which courses you had completed. And
it was a lot of the time, because there's so much movement and so much like loss of like stuff. I remember when I transferred to Lanesburg, they didn't have my transcript. They didn't have anything. They had to go off my word of what it was. And I had to have, I had to be informed enough to know all the high school class I had, what my grade was for that class, what letter grade I got for that class, my exam grade for all the classes. Like, I had to keep that. And thankfully, I knew enough about this that I actually kept all those things with me in a little folder.
Wow.
Just so, like, I had proof to show the school that, oh, I did pass this. I did pass this. And even then, I still had to end up taking some of the same classes over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I've taken algebra, I think, 6 times by this point.
That's interesting, because you could probably tell the difference between different ways that people teach it.
Oh, I know. And that's also, it's made my learning really strange. Like, I think about math in such a geometric way that most people just can't understand. And like, I try to explain, they're like, how do you think about it like that? And I'm like, that's just kind of how I've always thought about it. Like, and the different ways teachers teach is sometimes a strength and a curse. You can't really discuss with people in a way that's able to be comprehended or understood, but you're able to think in such a wide variety of ways that you can get out of most problems.
Can you give us an example of a problem you got out of?
I remember I had a high school geometry teacher, and he was something. He was a nice guy, but the way he taught was just so off the wall. And I learned some of like the craziest little like tendencies of patterns, and I ended up using that to prove a argument against my AP calculus teacher during my senior year about an optimization problem. And he was like, I've never seen anyone do that this way before. Not even like, I haven't even seen like my college professors for like Calc 3 do this. And I'm like, yeah, because they would never think of a correlation like this.
That's wild. So if I'm hearing you right, you've experienced a lot of different teaching styles and a lot of different probably like curriculum patterns, the way that people arrange different content.
Yes.
So you've had to decode what's the teacher think is most important, what is the curriculum trying to make me think is most important.
Absolutely.
That's pretty wild. Has that helped you in your non-academic life?
I would say yes. It's kept me on my toes, thinking creatively. Like, it's like there are so many situations that you could be given to someone who's not in my circumstance that would seem like too mind-boggling or too difficult to like not be able to process or get through. Mm-hmm. But you give me that problem, and I will sit down at the table with a piece of paper, uh-huh, and I will write out like 6 different ways to get out of this problem in different ways. And it leads to, I think, again, greater creativity, greater problem solving issues, and mm-hmm, more of that, because I had to advocate for myself so long, more that drive that I have to solve my own problems, because mm-hmm, who else will?
Right. And to be straightforward about it, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you think of an example of a problem that you've wrestled with recently? Because before we came down here, you and I were talking a little bit, and you were sharing with me that a lot of times when you talk to people about your life, they're kind of astounded, and it sounds like the conversation shifts to, you know, what their experience was compared to your experience, and that ends up being the focus of the conversation. And you were telling me, you're like, it's my life. I'm cool with talking about it, you know? And so I wonder if when you're problem solving, if sometimes people underestimate you, I think is what I'm asking.
Oh, definitely. Not saying that people look down on me, but there are times where maybe someone's like, oh, I can solve this problem, or there's this really difficult problem that they don't think I have any capability of approaching because I am a foster kid. And traditionally, a lot of foster kids, especially ones of my age, are very behind academically due to all the troubles that arise. And they're like, oh, he probably can't do it. And
And you figured out five ways to do it already.
Oh, I remember I was building a pool with my my adoptive dad. And he's like, ooh, what's the radius of this pool with where we have it set? Because we were putting up the wall. And he's like, dang it, I can't move and you can't move. Because he wanted to get his tape measure. And I looked at him because I know his exact height. I knew where the sun was in the time of day. I could tell where the shadow of it was. And I used that to calculate the exact area circumference of the pool wall to like calculate what we needed to do. And I told him that. And he's like, I doubt that. So he had me take the other part of the wall. He measured it, and I was down to like, I think the 1/100th of an inch. And he was like, how'd you do that? And I'm like, you got to think of creative ways to solve the problem. You can't just always measure it. You gotta use what details you have around you.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating, because when you're constantly in new environments and dealing with new set of circumstances, you can't always use the same problem solving you used before. So it sounds like you've constantly had to readjust not to a setting, but also a set of circumstances, like who's involved, what are their, you know, opinions and ideas. And that's wild. That's
absolutely. I would probably say my whole like life, or even just academically, is defined by a constant like change.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would say most people would define themselves by usually the constants that they go through in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's a strength for me to define myself by the change I'm constantly experiencing,
mm-hmm.
because not only does that give me more room to grow, it gives me room to adapt, to change, to become something more than what I am now.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that if you're in one spot too long, do you get restless?
Yes, absolutely. Without question. I get tired of where I am, but a change of perspective or a change of environment every now and then, I feel like has to happen. If not, I feel like I don't feel like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm just, it feels too out of body for me.
Mm-hmm. No, it's understandable. For sure. So we talked about your interactions with teachers. Let's talk a little bit about other students. What was your comfort level in the beginning with explaining why you just, you know, popped up at a new school? Or
there's a lot of uncomfortable feelings with like originally sharing like said details, because I didn't know how people would react to like hearing about my life and everything. And usually there's this preconceived notion that it's always the kid's fault in a foster like care situation, and that's usually it's just a bad kid. And so I had difficulties bringing that up, because I feared that I would be too quickly judged and just set aside. But as soon as I got more like comfortable, I realized that I could open up little by little. And then honestly, I think by the third move, I started like just being completely open about it, because it gave me, I mean, great talking points, great way to start a conversation or keep a conversation going, but it helped me make more friends. And honestly, for like the few times I was bullied about it, with me being as open as I was about it, it didn't ever faze me, because I'm like, oh, okay.
So you said that being more open about it helped you make more friends. Can you give an example or talk a little bit about that? What did that look like?
This is actually a really recent example that happened. So one of my friends, I won't name him, recently did not like me. He did not like me in high school. He found me rather annoying, which honestly, completely true. I used to play Christmas music around the school with a Bluetooth speaker that I had, just because I thought it was funny.
Okay.
Because I love Christmas. But he used that as kind of his image of me. But then we have a mutual friend. And so we were talking, and he's like, hey, what was your childhood like? And I kind of explained to him, and then he got more of like the image of what it was actually like, kind of being in my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, I had you completely wrong. You were just adjusting. You're actually like a really cool person to be around. And it's kind of those examples of me being more open, lets other people see it through my eyes.
Okay. And so they're not left with assumptions and
exactly.
Kind of like stereotypes.
They get the whole picture. And if they like it, they like it. If they don't, they can go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the stereotypes and people's perceptions of the foster care system, because there's probably a lot of stuff that people don't know. Maybe, like, what's some stuff that you think people should know?
That's really hard. I feel like what a lot of people need to know is that, yes, a lot of kids may come off as abrasive or angry, but that is not anger because of just them being them. That is anger caused by trauma for being in the system. That is a emotional response to being put in a world of, like, ever-changing.
Mm-hmm. And I know from reading some of your writing that the change is out of your control.
Oh, completely. Honestly, it feels like a Lego set that I don't have hands to build.
Mm-hmm. So you're constantly adjusting to someone else's recreation of your Lego set.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think should change with the foster care system? What could make it better?
That is kind of the ever-present question. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things. I actually don't think there's anything that we could directly change that wouldn't have an unknown negative outcome.
Okay.
But maybe if I could recommend anything, maybe just more public awareness of it. I feel like so few people actually, like, think or know about it.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, it just... If more people knew, I don't feel like there'd be such a preconceived notion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is there are many people who've gone through the foster care system or are in it now, and they're out in the world, and people don't know. You know, they don't, yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of kids will hide from that label of being a foster kid. Mm-hmm. Very few, like me, like, embrace it and accept it. But maybe that awareness would give them the comfort to be more open and share, like, their experiences.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying about just owning it, because it is part of who you are. And by owning it, it's helped you overcome obstacles and make friends and get ahead academically.
I mean, yeah, it's who I am. I mean, honestly, for how long I was in the system, I mean, it's a good, I don't know, fifth of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't think it'd be normal to say that, oh, this fifth of my life just never existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to disassociate yourself from it. Let's talk a little bit about where you are academically now and where you're headed. So talk a little bit about the classes that you're taking now and how the studying is going.
I'm currently taking Math 120, Composition 121, and Philosophy 211. I'm enjoying all my classes. I'm a math geek. So I love me some Math 120. I find it interesting. nothing too crazy, too difficult, but I enjoy Composition 121 a lot. It forces me to think in other ways that I haven't, and I enjoy the perspective it gives me.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, Philosophy 211, the brain hurt this class causes me. But it's fun brain hurt.
Right. I can tell because you're smiling.
I've not laughed so hard at a teacher in a class, but, like, understood so much. The discussions are great, but just the people in the class are great. I have so much fun.
That's very cool. So you tell us a little bit about your plans when you're done here at LCC.
So when I finish LCC, I plan to transfer to U of M Ann Arbor. I am in a fortunate position where I landed myself a 4-year full ride if I maintain my GPA high enough here. And I will use that to get my master's in engineering.
Mm-hmm. And that full ride came from your ownership of your identity.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Making it work for you. Yeah, that's super cool. Is there anything that you can think of, if somebody was listening to this podcast and they could relate to parts of what you're talking about, what would you want them to know about coming here to LCC?
You will find such a great community here. I have not once been judged for me being a foster youth. I, like, I can talk to anyone. I've had some wonderful, great conversations with people here, and it's all so accepting. I'd recommend anyone come here.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot for coming by and talking to me.
Anytime.
Thanks for stopping by the Audio Town Square of the Washington Square Review. Until next time, this has been the Washington Square On Air from Lansing Community College. To find out more about a writer's community and literary journal, visit lcc.edu/WSR. Writing is messy, but do it anyway.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Engaged learning and academic success is a priority at Lansing Community College. To help students navigate their educational career, LCC has created a proactive approach to learning and providing students with several academic support services. To find out what's available, visit lcc.edu/services.
Feeling froggy? Well, leap into 20-plus podcasts at lccconnect.org.
Art Happens Here, the podcast that explores the often curious and occasionally amazing art installations on, in, and around the campuses of Lansing Community College. I'm your host, Bruce Mackley.
Listen to this program and many others on demand at lccconnect.org.
If you or someone you know lives with epilepsy, be aware of an uncommon but fatal complication called sudden unexpected death in epilepsy, also known as SUDEP. It is the sudden unexpected death of a person with epilepsy who is otherwise healthy. Each year, SUDEP kills 1 in 1,000 adults with epilepsy and 1 in 4,500 children with epilepsy. The American Academy of Neurology and the American Epilepsy Society have released a new medical guideline to help patients, families, and caregivers better understand SUDEP and its risk factors. A high risk factor is generalized tonic-clonic seizures that involve the entire body. The guideline shows that reducing the number of tonic-clonic seizures could lower the risk of SUDEP. If you have epilepsy, it is important that you talk with your neurologist. To learn more about SUDEP, visit aan.com/guidelines. That's aan.com/guidelines.
Lansing Community College's Fresh Start program forgives outstanding student balances, allowing students to re-enroll without penalty. Fresh Start does not apply to student loan creditors. Learn more at lcc.edu/freshstart.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Amy Wagoner from the Historical Society of Michigan with a Michigan history moment. He wasn't as famous as Roy Rogers or Gene Autry, but Tim McCoy of Saginaw made his mark as a star in motion picture westerns. Tim McCoy was born in Saginaw in 1891. He grew up playing in and on the Saginaw River. McCoy and his friends would find log rafts that lumbermen had sent downriver. They'd climb aboard and take a wild ride through the city. They could have been killed, but it was a great adventure that helped prepare McCoy for a life of action. Tim McCoy enrolled in college but dropped out after a year and headed west. He dreamed of being a cowboy. Unlike other idle dreamers, he developed his skills enough to become a horse wrangler. He settled in Wyoming, where he took a deep interest in Native American culture. He treated the local Arapaho as equals, and they in turn accepted him into the tribe, allowing him to participate in dancing ceremonies. After World War I, McCoy took a job as Wyoming State Adjutant General. One day, a Hollywood movie representative asked for his help in finding 500 Native Americans to ride bareback for a scene in the 1923 motion picture, The Covered Wagon. McCoy served as a liaison for the movie's Native extras. The picture was a huge hit. McCoy quit his job and embarked on a promotional tour with a group of Native Americans. The experience led him to become an actor. He first appeared in a Western, The Thundering Herd, in 1925. In 1926, he signed with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and became a star in Westerns and historical dramas. War Paint, his first movie, was filmed on an Arapaho reservation in Wyoming. He became a major movie star, famous for his fast draw with a six-shooter, his steely gaze, and a specially made Stetson hat with a 9-inch crown and a 6-inch brim. Tim McCoy starred in dozens of movies from the 1920s through the 1950s. He had parts in some well-known films, including the 1956 Best Picture Oscar-winning Around the World in 80 Days. He was the only cowboy to be featured on a Wheaties cereal box. In 1974, he was inducted into the National Cowboy Hall of Fame. Tim McCoy died in 1978 at the age of 86. He rests today in Saginaw's Mount Olivet Cemetery. This Michigan History Moment was brought to you by MichiganHistoryMagazine.org.
Examining the issues and topics that affect our lives from the local level to the world stage. Listen to the programs of LCC Connect anytime at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Mason Promise Scholarship since 2016. The Mason Promise Scholarship is a community organization of volunteers that guarantees funding for 2 years of Lansing Community College education to selected Mason Public School students. These selected students are chosen by the Mason Public Schools at the end of the fifth grade and then become a Mason Promise Scholarship through an induction ceremony. Over the course of the next 6 years, these students receive mentoring and support as well as introduction to career possibilities through the Pathway Program. For more information on the Mason Promise Scholarship at LCC, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
Hi, I'm Greg Ladig, and I host a show called Stars on Sports with Assistant Athletic Director Stephen Cutter here on LCC Connect. It's all about Lansing Community College Athletic Department. You can always find out more about Stars on Sports and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
Guys, like having a place to live, eating food, wearing clothes, sending 639 texts a week on a shiny new phone? There's one thing that can help you get the money to do all of those things. It's called a job. If you're a guy turning 18, there's one important thing you need to do to make sure the job market is wide open for you. Register with the Selective Service System at sss.gov. Failing to register with Selective Service would mean you'd not only be breaking the law, you'd also be unable to apply for federal jobs, many state and municipal jobs, and all kinds of job training programs the government offers. So guys, take a minute and register with the Selective Service. You'll keep your job prospects open. Otherwise, how are you going to get the basketball shoes with full-length responsive cushioning and an outsole cutout for low-profile impact protection? Take that minute. Go to sss.gov and register with Selective Service and keep all your options open. Remember, it's quick, it's easy, it's the law.
Lansing Community College welcomes transfer students. Transfer students may apply transfer credits towards their LCC degree, certificate, or transfer program. Learn more at lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, thank you so much, Parker, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin. And today's show is extra special, at least for me, because it's my first episode featuring in-studio guests. Both are incredibly talented musicians, currently residing in the greater Lansing, Michigan area. Twyla Birdsong and Benjamin Hall are local mainstays on the blues scene here in Lansing. Twyla and Ben, awesome to have you guys at Time Signatures. How are you?
Doing very well.
Thank you.
Twyla, ladies first, so I'm going to start with you. I'd like for you to talk about your baptism into the blues a little bit. How did you get involved with the music, and where did it start for you?
So it started when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Now, honestly, just being in a family of music that loves music, but mainly gospel music. But I loved blues from going down to Michigan City, Indiana, where I'm from.
Sure.
And we'd go down there in the summertime in my uncle's Cadillac, and he'd be playing ZZ Hill all the way down there, B.B. King. So that was my first gospel music.
Sure.
To me, is blues. It's got that blues feel too. Listening to Mahalia Jackson growing up. So from there, but then performing, it actually started with me doing it with a garage band. I used to work at GM, Fisher Body.
And okay.
One of my friends there, he heard me singing because I always like automatically sing everywhere. And he heard me singing on the line, and he asked if I would come with them to the garage band. So I went there, and they were playing. And honestly, when they were playing the blues and they said they played the blues, I was like, what's that? But they were playing like things like Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wasn't exposed to that. So they really got me incorporated into learning a different, how many veins the blues has.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually like to call blues like a buffet.
Mm.
You've got a little bit of this and you got a little bit of that. But you know yourself that just about every genre of music has been touched by the blues.
That's true.
So how about you, Ben?
For me, blues was, there are a few people in my life that turned me on to blues. But, you know, for me, probably one of them was the gateway drug of the Blues Brothers. You know, and you saw those guys in their matching suit and, you know, looking so cool. There you go.
Right back here on the wall.
And my my uncle played harmonica, and he listened to Briefcase Full of Blues quite a bit. So I got introduced there. And then also my stepmother was she was a fan of all genres of music, really. But she introduced me to Coco Taylor and Bobby Blue Bland and stuff like that. And so I guess that's kind of where I first got into it. And then... it was a part of my life growing up consistently. And then when I graduated from high school, a friend of mine gave me a harmonica as a gift. And it just so happened that coincided with getting my heart broken for the first time.
Oh, man.
So I was like, you know, I could either just sit here and cry about it, or I can, you know, put this in front of my face and make something out of it. So
right.
That's kind of where it started. So I started playing harmonica by myself, just... unfortunately a lot while I was driving. I don't recommend that. but I mean, you could keep it in your front pocket.
Put a little disclaimer up here on the screen.
Okay, yeah.
Keep it in your front pocket, play along with the radio. You know, that's what I did. And so
you
I did that for
the
a while.
Stoplights, right?
Ben? No, it was on the highway.
Oh, okay. That's okay.
So that I could hold the steering wheel and really, you know, get into the cupping and everything. No, I didn't do that, but so that happened, and then I went off to MSU to college. And my mom worked with a blues guitarist, and they were looking for, they had a band and they were looking for a singer. And so I ended up going, and my first blues band was Who Dat Blues Band. And I played with those guys for a good 10 years.
Oh, man.
And I really cut my teeth with those guys, and they taught me a lot. And in turn, I taught them a lot, because the more I learned from them, the more I dug in and you know, increased my knowledge and stuff. And
sure.
So that's where I guess that's my blues story thus far. I mean, then I went back to Michigan State several years later and hosted my own blues radio show.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that for
a good 5 years, and had some great experiences from that.
Ben, I wanted to ask you now, I know that you play the blues harp or the harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
You also play the ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other instruments that you played along the way?
Well, I started off on the trumpet. in fifth grade.
Okay.
And I played that up and through high school. But then I got involved in choir and I liked singing more than I liked playing the trumpet.
Okay.
So I joined the choirs, had great experiences with. I went to Blue Lake Fine Arts Camp, got to go to Europe with that
wow
group, and
nice
sang in all the mass choirs at MSU and stuff. So got to do some great pieces there. So I mean, voice is really my main instrument.
Sure.
I say I'm a singer that plays the harmonica and the ukulele in that order.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, but started playing the trumpet. Also played the baritone in high school, and then I had to learn how to play piano. Wrote a lot of songs on piano, but had to learn to play piano. Because I went to school for music.
Okay.
So, yeah, I guess that's I don't cool. play piano at gigs though. So that's too much.
Understood. Understood. How about you, Twyla? Any instruments in your past?
Yes, the violin and viola. You know, Lansing School District is so wonderful. At least they were when I was growing up. You were gonna do an instrument. I think everyone had to do an instrument. Started out recorder. But no, I don't know anything about that. But violin, viola, and I love playing the viola. It's got that. As I thought about it later on in life, it's the same tone that I like. The violin is a lot of higher in tone, sure. And I resonate even vocally with the lower registry. I used to always want to sing soprano because it seemed like the sopranos at church always got the leads,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So I always wanted to do that, but I have, as I've gotten older, I comfortably embrace my lower registry.
Yeah. You guys have both been involved in local blues music for several years, a lot longer than I've been involved. I want you to expand just a little bit on that and talk about some of the bands that you've played with. And I'm going to start with you, Twyla.
Oh, West Side Healers were the first, and that was the garage band, and our first gig was at the Temple Club.
Okay.
Down in Old Town, and then Red Hot Blues Band with so many different players.
We both competed in the international blues competition.
Yes.
The same year.
Actually, the first time I went down to Memphis, it was with the Hoopties, and that was Jason Strothide on bass and Eric Payne on drums and Aaron Holland,
yeah. Okay.
Fantastic guitarist. Mm-hmm. And Andy Callis.
And since you're talking about being down at the IBC, you also went with Michael Aiea, didn't you also?
I did a duo with Mike Aiea.
Yeah.
The first time down there was with the Hoopties.
Little Birdie told me.
It was really a learning experience and just taking all that in. And then I wanted to go again. I went as a duo with Mike Aiea. That's correct.
Wow. And you, yep. Sir?
I went as a duo with Stan Budzinski.
Okay, yeah.
And we had a great time.
So what is that experience like for you guys?
I mean, I feel like everybody should do it. Everybody should try. For me, the competition, I was kind of sour on it. I'm not going to lie about it. But the experience, the people that you meet, the music you get to hear, that made it all worthwhile
for me. Yeah,
because
that's the best of the best, isn't
yeah.
it? Globally.
All over the world. Yeah,
it's not just local or national.
When we were there, it was like some guys from Venezuela ended up winning the whole thing.
Wow.
And the very first night of competition, we competed early and then we went to dinner and there was a group, there were several groups playing that were just world class, absolute world class. There's this one duo. They ended up winning the whole thing, but I went up to them and I remember I said, if you do not win this whole thing, there's no justice in this world. And they ended up winning the whole thing. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. How about you, Twyla? What was the experience like for you?
The first time we went down with like an entourage from Lansing.
The entourage goes every year.
Oh my God. What'd you say?
I said the entourage goes every year because when we went down, Denise was there.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Ron, I think that was the first year Ron went.
Yeah, okay.
And, but
that
yeah,
makes
there
it
was
so much fun.
Yeah.
Like when you got your people there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Man, that makes it fun.
Yeah, because you know that they're pulling for you mm-hmm. more than anybody. So,
yeah.
But everybody, I didn't feel like it was a competition, but I never felt like we were in competition with one another. Like the other bands, they were all so friendly. I met people down there that I'm still friends with today. Stacy Brooks, I told you about her,
yep.
And I sent her your message. But I had a great experience. The first time, it was like I was too much in my head. I was way too much in my head. So to really take it in, that's why I wanted to go down again. But my best experience down there was seeing Bobby Rush. Every time I see Bobby Rush, he was in the audience. We were performing at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Okay.
And he came in, and I went over there like a little schoolgirl.
So did he see you play?
I don't know. No, He came in afterwards. That would have been cool. I don't know if that, at that time, that probably wouldn't have been cool because I would have been too like, but now it would have been cool. I would have been singing to him.
Yep. But I want to flip the page just a little bit, and I specifically want to ask you about something. Mm-hmm. The Black Rock 101, I remember seeing the first iteration of it. You've definitely polished it up and really trimmed around the edges on it, and I've heard it's an incredible presentation. For those that have not heard of the Black Rock 101, give a little background about that and talk about it just a little bit.
It's a means to entertain and educate at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not trying to be political or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. I just want to highlight some of the founders of the genre that we call rock and roll, and some other people that continued the legacy. It's a journey. It goes from, you know, the earliest person that is considered rock and roll, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, all the way through a group that their release was in 2023 called the Black Pumas.
Okay.
And really try to do as much in between as we can. I mean, it's, you know, I can't do every artist, but, you know, I've got some Chuck Berry in there, Big Joe Turner, you know, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, as I said, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Sly and the Family Stone, Terrence Trent D'Arby, Prince, you know, like I said, just trying to fill in the gaps as much as possible. So going all the way from the roots to MTV and beyond.
How's the feedback from the people that are seeing your presentation now? Because I've heard really, really good things about it.
Everybody's loved it.
Okay.
Everybody's loved it. It's, you know, I really, really was very careful about the music that I selected. I didn't want to just, like if I did a Chuck Berry tune, I'm not going to do Johnny B. Goode. You know, I don't know, I'm trying to think of another group that I did that with, but I tried to like take something that was completely unique and completely that artist. The playlist was very, very carefully curated, and everybody seemed to really enjoy it, and everybody's asking about when's Black Rock 201. So that is something that is in the works.
Beautiful.
That I am thinking about. All the guys are still interested in doing it. We do have an upcoming performance. We're playing for the Lansing Summer Concert Series. On Juneteenth. So we will, and it's going to be pretty much the entire presentation minus five songs. So it's because it's two, it has to be 2 hours worth of material, and it's a, you know, 3 hours worth of material, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm planning on being there. You're listening and watching Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Urban. And my guest today, Lansing's own Twyla Birdsong. We've also got Benjamin Richard Hall. And just talking about a little more of the Lansing-based stuff, some more of the Central Michigan type flavor of music. So I want to talk about a couple of the presentations that you've done over the last 18 months or so, because you did kind of a jazzy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you did something that had a little more of a gospel. And didn't you do some gospel too?
Well,
kind of a mix?
At the gospel, you may be considering at the Blues Festival. That's my root, so I'm always going to interject. You're going to hear that.
Sure.
No matter what the words may be saying, I'm gospel. It's the good news, okay? The blues is just, like I tell people, it's raw. It's what it is.
Right.
But the labeling, too, I understand people have to label things so that you know what you're going to get or whatever. But really, at the root and core of who I am, I don't think there is a label for it.
Okay.
I'm very eclectic, but yes, I did do a gospel tune, if you want to call it that. Somebody has got to serve somebody. Bob Dylan, he wrote that. I think he wrote that. Then I heard Etta James, I think, I did her version.
Okay. And then what were the Bach Rock? Talk about that one a little
Bach
bit.
Rock.
Yeah.
I had been wanting to do some of those tunes that Dionne Warwick, she did, and Dusty Springfield.
Sure.
And Andy Callis, he came up with that whole collaboration thing, and they did a fabulous job with the music. Only thing I had to do was come in there and sing some songs that I love to sing, So I love that afternoon. And like for the last 28 years, I've been raising children. That's been my main focus. And my last baby left 2 years ago. And it's always been in my heart that after she left, then I would be free to do music. So that was like my tiptoe back into trying to get some music going.
Sure.
But really, I say no labels, but blues, some funky hard blues.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that's what's hitting my soul every time and pulling me.
Twyla, I got to ask you, you were also involved, you involved me and another photographer in a really, really cool photo shoot idea last year. And I what she did is she invited a group of female artists from the greater Lansing area, as many as wanted to come. And it was such a hit that she decided to do the same thing with a bunch of males within the greater Lansing area, a lot of men. And I think you were there too, weren't you? That Yeah, you turned out for that. Where did the inspiration for that come? Because you and I are kindred spirits when it comes to preserving history. But I got to hear the backstory on this.
You know, honestly, it's I can't remember originally what I was thinking. But with Miss Betty Baxter, with her dying, I know how it originally started. I was out with Jen Harborough. And Jen Harborough, she's a singer in Lansing, a local singer. I love that girl's tone of voice. I just love her as a person. She's a great entertainer. Can't remember the band that she used to play with, but that's neither here nor there. But I was hanging out with her and having such a good time. And we were with another singer, female singer. And I was thinking, man, we should take some photos together. Oh, it was Gina. Gina had showed up. Gina Garner, who I love. I love these women. And I was like, we should take some photos together. And then I was thinking, but I know so many other females that I wouldn't want them to feel some type of way. And I love those females too. So I was like, maybe I can coordinate a lot of them coming together. So Miss Betty Baxter was going to be part of that photo shoot. And trying to coordinate so many people that was going to be, to have them do it all at once, it would have probably taken some time.
Sure.
But because Miss Betty Baxter, she was in her 90s. And I was like, Twyla, you may not really have that much time because I really wanted her to be a part of it.
Yes.
So we went ahead and got together and got the females that we that wanted to come and that could come. And it turned out to be such a wonderful, fun day with them. Like, we just had fun going through. And Linda Vail, she took the picture photos for us for that day. So we met down at the Capitol. And then when we posted them, the men, they loved it. And I love that they loved it and honored, you know, the representation of what it was. And what it was for me, just lovely women getting together and enjoying one another and honoring one another too. It didn't feel any cattiness or anything like that. And I love that. And then the men, they were on board to come.
Yes.
And thankfully me and Marge Mooney, she was there, Freddie's wife.
It's like herding cats, man.
Yeah. Well, they weren't bad. They weren't bad. You know, and I took, hey, that was on you. I'm not going to tell a man what to do. I know how to do that. But we were able to get a photo with them too, so.
We were motivated to get that picture done because it was very windy and it was cold that day. But you know, I have to be honest, thanks to you, I made some personal connections with some musicians that I'd never met before. I knew them by name, but I didn't know them. And you know, like you said, with the passage of time, we're losing people at an alarming rate. And I look at all of our musicians in town and none of them are getting any younger, you know? So you want to capture those moments when you can. That's the biggest reason that I do this.
And our music scene in Lansing is been so good for me.
Oh, like, yeah.
Emotionally, spiritually, everything. It's been uplifting. You go out and you hear these guys or gals, and it's just nothing but, like, it feels like a family reunion every time we come out, because that's how I feel like we've been. Just a close-knit group of people.
And I would agree with that. Ben, I want to flip the page a little bit. you are currently involved with the Further Adventures of Fat Boy and Jive Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to ask you this question. Where in the hell did that name come from?
Truthfully?
Yeah.
My dad smoked a lot of pot when I was a child.
Yeah.
And he used to make up radio shows on the spot. And he'd feed us kids lines, and we would be the characters these radio shows. And one of the radio shows was about a crime-fighting duo that was kind of like, Batman and Robin, but it was Jive Turkey, which was my older brother, and Fat Boy, which was me.
Okay.
Which that, coincidentally, was my name throughout my youth. So, interesting youth. But
did you ever record any of this?
Yeah, he recorded it, and my stepbrother and my sister were the villains, and it was very interesting. So. I was trying to come up with names for the band, and that memory came up, and I was like, well, I got to put my name first because it's my band. So
sure.
That's why it's the Further Adventures of Fat Boy and Jive Turkey.
Oh, I love it.
Wow.
So,
and now you know the rest of the story.
So cool.
Yeah. If you have a copy of that anywhere, I would help you preserve it.
My dad does on audio tape somewhere.
Oh man. I've got a cassette deck hooked into
my
computer.
His girlfriend has a tendency to hide his stuff so he doesn't know where it is.
Oh, man.
Somewhere in the attic or something.
Well, if you ever find it and you want to get it saved and digitally encoded,
yeah,
whatever,
absolutely.
I'd be more than happy to do that. This is your chance to talk about anything that you've got coming up. Anything else that you can think of that's happening in your world that you can see coming?
My new band collaboration. We need to get our music done.
So this year's a preparation.
Everything is gone. The every gig is booked for the summer series, the concert series, all
okay.
That's gone. So this will give us a good time to get our stuff together and then come out smoking in 2025.
Okay.
And hopefully some little gigs before then.
Well, I hope you get a chance to. I think that would be wonderful, and maybe record some music as well.
Mm-hmm.
Be kind of nice to hear some new music with
mm-hmm.
you on it. I'm
mm-hmm.
excited about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Twyla and Ben, I want to thank you both for being part of the show today. It's been an honor to have you here. I also want to thank you, the listener and the viewer and supporter and the fan, because without you, none of this would be possible. Absolutely. We would like you to make sure that you click the subscribe button below and also click the notification so you can tell when we put up a new episode. And just stay with us. Check out the show and make it part of your weekly excursion into the blues, if you would. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham. Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm home.
Connecting you with Lansing Community College, this is LCC Connect.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
For service members ready to make their transition into a civilian career, Lansing Community College helps veterans navigate their educational path with the option to earn college credits for military experience in related fields, personalized support from confidential counseling to help find VA benefits, and fast-track programs in information technology and medical specialties. To find out how, visit lcc.edu and search military credit.
This has been a presentation of LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. All shows featured on LCC Connect are recorded at the WLNZ studio, located on LCC's downtown campus. Each program is podcast-based and can be heard anytime at lccconnect.org. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on one of our shows, connect with us by emailing lcc-connect@lcc.edu.